It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
All right, I'm glad you're here. I really am. In fact, you're going to be glad you're here too, because David Ackerman is back. And David Ackerman is Chief Compliance Officer at Sound Income Strategies. I was talking to him before the show here. And I think last time he was here was like back in June or July. Anyway, he has, I think, some information that all of you guys are going to be excited about to hear. You know, there's all this fear-mongering about how the United States is owned by all these foreign powers. And David is here to give us the truth. He's going to let us know what's really happening out there. Like I said, David Ackerman, Chief Compliance Officer at Sound Income Strategies. David Ackerman, welcome back.
Thanks, Bert. It's great to be back. I appreciate you having me on again.
You bet. You bet. So I want to dive into this because I think that this is really something that, you know, you hear mainstream media talking about how we are screwed, and you even hear some of our government leaders saying how terrible our condition is. But so talk about what you found here.
So it's really important to understand that there is a lot of pontificating that goes on in politics. I know you're shocked and your listeners are completely shocked to hear that. But, you know, the U.S. debt is definitely getting out of control, and we're sitting around $19 trillion a couple of months after whoever is elected, they're going to be dealing with a $20 trillion debt ceiling. So it's definitely out of control, but it's really important to understand, number one, how that debt is distributed, how it's built around, and number two, to kind of quell this myth that China and all these other foreign powers own the U.S. and there's nothing that we can do about it. That is completely false. So it's really just important to understand that, number one, that is a myth, and then number two, how the debt is actually broken up.
Yes. So dive into this because, if I understand this correctly, recently released data shows that the value of foreign holdings of the U.S. assets rose to, and this is such a big number, $32.5 trillion at the end of Q2 2016. So what does this mean? I mean, how does that compare? Because, I mean, $32 trillion seems like a pretty good chunk of the good old U.S. of A.
It's definitely a lot. I'm definitely not going to dismay that. That's an awful lot of money to anybody. I would love for a small percentage of that number.
Right.
So, okay, of the U.S. debt, meaning of the bonds and different types of investments that the U.S. Treasury uses, you're talking about roughly $19 trillion. So, in and of itself, the numbers that you're seeing are just inflated because it includes a whole bunch of other things. So first and foremost, we're looking at $19 trillion worth of U.S. Treasury debt. Five and a half of that is intergovernmental holdings. So what that means is there are different agencies that then essentially buy Treasury bonds or other debt from other agencies. And you might be saying, well, why would anybody possibly do that? The Social Security Trust Fund is a perfect example. They actually take in more revenue than they actually need at the current time, trying to hedge against money that they're not going to have in the future. So what they do with all that extra money is, instead of stuffing it under a very large mattress, they buy treasuries with it. So there are a number of different agencies that do something similar, like Medicaid and the Military Retirement Fund, things of that nature. So that's going to roughly take out another $3 trillion out of that number, plus another $2 trillion in other holdings. So five and a half of that 19 now brings it down to $14 trillion. And that's where we start getting into the foreign governments and all those other types of entities. Foreign governments, including China, including Japan, including all of these other big, crazy powers that we are all so scared of, own about $6 trillion in debt. That's a lot of money.
That's nothing.
But when you're talking about $14 trillion of the total debt, it's really not that much. So one of the reasons why I really like having conversations like this, and especially love talking to you about this, is because when we hear about raising the debt ceiling and all that saber-rattling, it's really important to remember that most of the debt that is owned in the U.S. is owned by Social Security, retirement and pension funds, and other types of retirement accounts. So if we default, yes, foreign governments are going to take a hit, but the main hit is actually going to be taken by retirees. And that's not something that I'm particularly comfortable with.
Yes, I don't like that at all. All right, so explain to me, as a retiree, how am I going to take this hit?
Essentially, what it looks like is if you picture picture all these investments in different types of bonds. So when you add up the debt like Social Security plus your retirement and pension funds, a lot of that is invested in U.S. debt. And it's done on purpose because it's very safe. It's the entire reason that other major funds are purchasing into it as well. So other countries like China, they've purchased about $1.2 trillion of our debt, which still, look, that's a lot. That's 6% owned by one country. But when I've spoken to different retirees, and I know that you and I were joking that I try to explain this stuff to my mom sometimes because she's a New York City school teacher, and a lot of her investments are in U.S. Treasuries. When they start saber-rattling and they say, oh, we're going to sell off all this debt and we're going to bankrupt the country, never going to happen. Absolutely never going to happen. I mean, they can't do it all. China is in the worst domestic partnership with the U.S. that you could possibly imagine. I mean, as much as we saber-rattle and we argue and yell, neither one of us is moving out. So it's one of those instances where they're using this to control the value of their own currency as well as keep the dollar high. So the entire idea about us being owned by foreign powers is just – it's why I like having conversations like this, to dispel those types of myths and so that, to help people really understand where this money is going.
Yeah.
It's frightening,
and
isn't
you know
it?
What? It is. And it's so important, too, because, again, we hear so much back and forth, and as you called it, saber rattling, and just this, this whole doom and gloom that we're owned by China or Japan. And it's good to know that when you start pulling back the layers, you realize it's really not that bad. And it's not. It's not a ridiculous amount percentage-wise, right? It's not like, hey, they own, 20 or 30% of our debt. It's nothing like that. It's a small percentage.
Right, exactly. And next to China, the next country that no one ever talks about, Japan. And they own just slightly less than what China owns. So let's say if China owns 6.5%, Japan owns about 6%. So, and no one's scared about them. And meanwhile, they're actually in far more dire straits economically than China is. So there's really what it boils down to is people use the idea of foreign debt and the debt ceiling as kind of a smokescreen. And something that I've always had a huge issue with was the amount of spending that we deal with. The debt ceiling is different than our debt, meaning that when we raise the debt ceiling, we're paying on debts that have already accrued. And the real way to tackle this problem is to lower how much money we're spending. So really just lower our budget and try to live within our means, so to speak. It's kind of hard to fathom that we can't live within $20 trillion means, but that's where we're at. So when you hear these things about foreign debt and China is coming to bankrupt our country with – dumping all of these U.S. treasuries on the market, it's really just a smokescreen to keep people from seeing what's really going on.
Yeah. And then the other thing that they talk about is, again, China's the example of China calling in all these notes. And to me, that's always been a big, just a big smokescreen, because, you know, it's no different than if you let me borrow, you know, whatever, $100, and then you come collecting and you say, hey, Bert, I'm calling in that note. You owe me that $100. I want my $100. But if I'm too broke to pay it, there's really, you have just a very few resources. You know, and if the U.S. got to the point where it couldn't pay its debt, yeah, that's bad, but it wouldn't be the first time.
It's so what's more likely to happen when it comes, and I'm really glad you raised this point, China will eventually start to sell off some of the debt that they have. They've already been doing it. I mean, somewhere around the end of 2013, they actually owned $1.3 trillion as opposed to $1.25. So they're definitely selling off a little bit at a time. But if you think, step back from the economics, step back from the law, and just think about this logically for a second. They have purchased 6% of the largest economy in the world, one of the most robust. The reason they've done that is to make sure that the U.S. dollar, the value of the U.S. dollar, stays high. By keeping the U.S. dollar high, they are then able to export more because the buying power in China is greater. If they dump all of their treasuries onto the open market, even if they dump a small amount of what they have, the value of the dollar plummets. The second that dollar plummets, what happens to their manufacturing? What happens to their exports? It's no longer attractive to the rest of the country, the rest of the world. If you had a choice as a business owner between manufacturing in the U.S. and manufacturing in China, and it cost you the same in both countries, where would you go? So the idea that China is going to bankrupt us overnight is just it's a great talking point if you're trying to scare somebody into a certain course of action, but the reality of it, the economics of it, just the common sense of it, it's never going to happen.
Right, right. You know what? As you said, you know, that we have this really symbiotic relationship. And the point that you made, I think, is a perfect illustration of that, where if they dump it into the market, it hurts them immediately as well as it hurts us.
I used to do business there before I was in financial services. I used to work for a company that bought and sold electronic components. And I actually went to China a couple of times. And one of my favorite stories kind of illustrates how capitalist they really are. This is not the big, bad red machine anymore. I was online to go see Mao's tomb, and it's very popular among Chinese people because he was a very popular dictator. So they're selling roses at the beginning of the line before you walk in so that you could place a rose on his casket as you're walking by, and it's encased in glass and you can actually see him. Well, okay. As I'm walking through, I'm one of the only non-Asian people on this line. As I'm walking through and I'm staring at the tomb, I see a guy with a box, walks over, grabs a handful of the roses, dumps it in the box, walks through a door, and then walks right back up to the front to sell them again. So if that doesn't illustrate how capitalist China has become, I don't know what does. They're not dumb. They're not stupid. They're very calculating. They understand that they're playing the long game here. They're not looking about next quarter or next year. They're looking at the next quarter of a century. So the thought that they will then try to bankrupt the U.S. when they are quite literally partners with us in so many respects is ludicrous. It's truly ludicrous.
Right, right. Now, let me ask you this. You know, based on your experience, I'd like your opinion on this and that. What is the point of telling the U.S. That we're owned by all these foreign forces? I mean, is it just to ignite fear, or, you know, what's the benefit? You look at somebody like Glenn Beck. I know Glenn Beck used to talk about how much of the U.S. is owned by foreign powers. But what's the point? Other than, I don't know, and I like Glenn Beck, so I think that Glenn Beck's right a lot of the time. But so what's the point of these guys just stirring up the pot, get people excited? What's your thought? Because it doesn't seem to be any benefit to me.
And the benefit is really just it's political in nature. When you are debating with someone who is on the opposite side of the aisle, and I don't care, Democrat, Republican, Independent, whatever it is, you need to score points. The question, you're not trying to convince the other person that you're debating against that you're right. You're trying to convince everybody who's listening around you. So when you excite fear in people by saying we are being sold to foreign powers because we're increasing our debt, and the more we increase our debt, the more we need to sell, and the more we sell, we're selling off our country little by little. It's just think about what those types of feelings produce. I mean, it's a call to action. People are, you know, grabbing torches and pitchforks, and they're ready to truly come out in numbers. It helps with fundraising. It helps with you know, getting people excited about politics and individual candidates. So, but really, it illustrates a tremendous, tremendous lack of understanding, because people who are in the field who actually deal with these types of debt instruments, we tune this part out. We quite literally just let them do what they do and then work on the other issues that are important to us, because at the end of the day, China's not going to – how are you going to stop China from purchasing securities in an open market, especially when the vast – I mean, you're talking 80% of our debt is owned domestically, not internationally. Now, granted, that 20% is still a very large number, but it's not to the point where you hear political pundits talking about. So what I will really hope they focus on, and I think this is going to be a very big issue starting in 2017, is educating people on what the debt ceiling is and using the debt ceiling and raising the debt ceiling as a catalyst to help rein in the spending that has been uncontrollable and which has gotten us into this $19 trillion debt in the first place. So to answer your question, I really think it's more of just a call to arms than it is they truly and honestly believe that the boogeyman is coming.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting. And again, it's David, to me, it's just so interesting that, like I said earlier, you start pulling back the layers and you realize, it's not that bad. And as you said earlier, Japan has as much as China, you know, give or take a little bit less, but still, you said they're a close second, and we're not that concerned about them. I mean, I guess apparently that's because supposedly they're our allies, right? Where China, we have this love-hate relationship. In one sense, you hear, you know, we're constantly beating up on China because they send us all this contaminated crap, but we never stop doing business with them.
Right, exactly, because we like our inexpensive goods and services. And I think over the years that hopefully is going to change. I mean, between you and I am a huge fan of my asbestos-flavored lollipops. They're delicious. They're made in China. So
that's the only place you can get them.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they taste phenomenal. But the real trick is, As years go, one of the reasons I got into – I'm a chief compliance officer. So one of the reasons I kind of moved in this direction, and I'm proud to say I'm a graduate of Hofstra Law School, where they just had the debate not too long ago. The protecting the markets takes more than saber rattling. And I am personally liable if my firm does something that is so egregious or so wrong that we lose people's retirements, that we lose people's money. And it doesn't mean that we can't be wrong. We can make wrong investments, but we can't defraud anyone. And that's how you change the system from within. What I'm hoping is, as we move forward and we get smarter regulation, not necessarily more, but smarter regulation, We get more education, like what your viewers are, you know, the discussion we're having right now that your listeners are hearing, understanding exactly what the problem is and not being blindsided by punditry. That way, when you go to the polls, you're making a really informed decision. You're not just necessarily making an emotional one. When you combine all those forces together, I truly and honestly believe that eventually we are going to see, in the next few years, after a market correction, we are going to see an economic boom in this country, the likes of which, you know, no one has ever dreamed of.
Yeah. It's, you know, and what's interesting, too, is Donald Trump made it a point to say, hey, you know, that we have this really cruddy bargain or trade with China, and that he's going to stop it, and he's going to do all this great stuff. And I don't know how many people believe them. I think that he has done a lot of business with China, but doing business with Chinese businessmen is different than doing business with China. And I think that when you look at a culture that is so, you know, is so based on face value and there's certain protocols and stuff like that, to sit there and automatically make these wide sweeping remarks that you're going to kick China's butt and all this other stuff. First of all, that automatically, I think it's automatically the wrong way to go. It's the wrong signal. But I don't see anybody making any real sweeping changes anytime soon, whether it's Hillary or Trump in that White House. I don't think anything's going to change with China anytime soon.
I think you're right in the sense that it's definitely not going to change being instigated by us. And the reason I say that is, like I said, China's got a long-term plan. One of the portions of that plan is they are trying to make the yuan, their local currency, what the U.S. dollar is today. They're not going to be able to do that so long as they're artificially inflating or deflating their currency by buying our treasuries. So in order for them to execute on their long-term plan, number one, they're going to have to sell some of our treasuries and stabilize their currency a little bit. And then number two, they have to somehow make sure that they're – and this is where I think their plan falls short and where I think our action is going to come in. The wages in China are eventually going to catch up to that of the rest Western world. So once that happens, it's no longer, you know, inexpensive to buy an iPhone, you know, 40 or an exploding Note 7 from China and have it manufactured there. It just, it no longer makes sense anymore. So once that happens, where are all these jobs going to go? Where's all this manufacturing going to go? My personal belief is eventually you're going to see a lot of foreign direct investment into Africa, where it's still cheap labor, a lot of open space, and they're looking for foreign direct investment. So they're doing everything they can to get other countries there. And then in addition, I think 3D printing is actually going to change the game, because then you're going to, right now the focus is on these very large manufacturing facilities with a lot of workers who are very unskilled and underpaid. And with 3D printing, you're able to build, you know, more sophisticated items with less people. And on top of that, you don't need as big of a manufacturing space. So now all of a sudden, it's cheaper to manufacture it in the U.S., where you don't have to ship it for 18 days across the ocean. So
right.
I think the market in and of itself is going to force our hand. It's just a question of how long it's going to take between now and then. But the debt in and of itself is – I mean, it's almost irrelevant to that, because even though we're issuing more debt and even though foreign governments are purchasing it in larger numbers, you know, the world's still turning. Industry is constantly evolving. So there are things that you and I are probably going to talk about in a few years to come that we're going to look back and like, oh, remember in 2016 how foolish we were that we thought that this was important? So,
yeah.
It's an exciting time. It really is.
Absolutely. You know, Well, I like what you said there. Yeah, you're right. You know, we're going to look back and think how foolish this is. And there's no, obviously there's no way of telling which way things are going to go. But I think one of the big takeaways here is that, and we all know this on a deeper level, but sometimes we forget this on a surface level, and that is no matter what you hear on the news or on your favorite talk show, you really have to do some research and verify the information. Because if you were to listen to the pundits, if you were to listen to the government officials, we all would have sworn that China owns, you know, 80% of the U.S. And, you know, come to find out that they have a small percentage.
Exactly. And one of my favorite comedians is Louis Black. And I took my little brother to go see him on Broadway a number of years ago. He said the most hysterical thing, where he watches pundits or different pundit shows regardless of the topic. And you have one person who has years of experience, degrees, everything, and he's very credible arguing for one side of an issue. And then on the other side of the issue, you have someone with just as many degrees and just as many years of experience, and they're effectively arguing the other side of the issue. So when both sides are credible, he's just sitting there and his head explodes. So really, it's just a question of, do you do due diligence? Everyone has those couple of issues that are truly important to them. You know, and I'm sure you've got plenty of listeners that are listening to this discussion about foreign debt and truly could not care less. But
right.
for those people who this is a substantive issue and the debt is something that is really concerning to them, there is information out there. All information is going to be biased in some form or fashion, even from the government,
sure.
because there's a way to publish numbers. So it's just, don't necessarily look for the facts that support what you believe. Tailor your belief to the facts that you find, and then try to keep an open mind. And when you do that, you will be a far more informed consumer. You'll be a far more informed citizen, so that you can vote according to what your beliefs truly are. And in this day and age of where information is so readily available, I think that's what's happening. I'm hoping.
Yeah, you hope. And I think that in some cases, maybe that's true. I don't know. It's hard to tell. I just, you know, either way, David, I'm so glad that you stopped by today and kind of opened our eyes to the reality of what's happening with the $32.5 trillion worth of debt, stocks, and bonds that we're dealing with. And it's going to be interesting to see because, as you mentioned earlier, China's having they're dealing with their recession. It's going to be interesting to see what they do. And it's also going to be interesting to see what happens when they start selling off some of those holdings that they have, because sooner or later, that's why they got in it. I'm assuming they didn't get in it to hold it forever, but sooner or later, they're going to want to sell it to try to get a little bit of return on that and maybe buy something else or buy some more. But either way, I've really enjoyed today's conversation. I want to thank you for stopping by.
Thanks so much, Bert. I really appreciate it. And the one takeaway I hope your listeners get from this is, when this debt ceiling issue comes up, get informed. Realize that if we let the debt ceiling lapse and we default on our debts, the real people who are going to be hurt is us. So
yes.
Don't get blindsided by smoke and mirrors. Do your due diligence. Become educated. And obviously listen to programs like yours.
Thank you so much, David. Looking forward to have you back again.
My pleasure, bro. Take care.
Good stuff there from David Ackerman, Chief Compliance Officer of Sound Income Strategies. Always a lot. He's a gifted researcher. You can tell he knows his facts. He just always enjoy him when he's on the show. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.